The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, for the second time this week, a bonus episode. And it's because, yeah, both of Japan's national teams at the Olympics are through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, glad to be doing it in these circumstances and not both teams having bowed out with horrendous results the other day. But so, yeah, good to be talking about two very good results. I think the men, again, were fantastic and the women turned up a little bit more than they have done previously in the tournament to get through. And they've got some really intriguing quarterfinals on the horizon.
Indeed, and yes, we're here to preview the two quarterfinals. The women playing on Friday night. And the men against Sweden, that is, I should say, and then the men playing New Zealand on Saturday. And that is, a perfect excuse to get everybody's favourite New Zealander living in Gifu back onto the podcast. Richie Palmer, welcome back to J-Talk. How are you?
Hey, Ben. Hey, Sam. Good to be back. Very happy man at the moment.
I can certainly imagine so, Richie. So, yeah, at the start of this Olympic football tournament, what were your expectations for the New Zealand national? Sorry, I'm not sure what the Olympic football team's nickname is. I mean, New Zealand's very good at nicknaming their national teams, of course. But and what are the men's Olympic football team going by?
They are called the Aussie Whites.
Okay, that makes sense.
Sounds a bit Australian to all of us. So we're quite disappointed in the New Zealand camp, actually.
So just out of interest, I'm sorry. Yeah, the women got knocked out. But what were they going by?
What were they? Ollie Ferns?
Okay, because of the silver ferns for... Yep.
I think so. I can't quite think of it right now. Yeah.
Right. We'll roll with that. We'll roll with that. Anyway, okay, so, what were your expectations at the start of the group stage then? New Zealand placed in Group B. Obviously, they got off to a perfect start. I'm not sure if you would have been expecting to beat South Korea in their opener. But, yeah, coming in... players to watch, players you are hoping would, maybe prove themselves on this bigger stage?
Yeah, well, I'll just say first, I expected us to get through, and I think a lot of New Zealanders did too, which is a very rare thing for New Zealand football. We've actually got a bit of a golden generation at the moment that have, from the under-17 World Cup, FIFA World Cup, they beat Paraguay, and they got to the knockout stage and only just lost to Brazil by 1-0, and then in the under-20s, they got to the knockout stages again. You know, they knocked out Honduras 3-1, and then the next year, 2 years later, they beat them 5-0. So there actually was quite a bit of expectation on this team, which probably no one outside of New Zealand would have known because, you know, we're normally quite easy beats. But so we were expecting to go through, hoping, but, you know... South Korea, that game was, I didn't expect to win that game. And we went in with a really defensive formation. It was a 5-4-1. And it was pretty much a park the bus, let them attack all they could, and take our chance when it came. And that's exactly what we did when... Chris Wood, the old Burnley talisman, got the goal. It was quite a surprising result, but with Winston Reid in the team, we held them off pretty well. I mean, they were a bit unlucky with a couple of shots and a bit off target, but this is the same Korea that bet Romania 4-0 and then Honduras 6-0 in the next two games. So it was quite the result, and it really set us up for maybe coming top of the pool, and we've got some good. Of course, I said Winston Reid stood out, and Nando Pinaca from Rio Ave in Portugal is playing well. Joe Bell playing in Norway. We've got some Wellington Phoenix players, and Liberato Kakachi playing in Saint Truidens in Belgium. Is that right, Sam?
It sounds right. It's a Japanese home for various people. If they want to go to Europe, they all seem to end up there.
Yeah. So, it was a great start. It was a very... We have a very... a new manager for the Olympics is Danny Hay, and he's unfortunately brought in quite a defensive mindset. And when we were beating these Honduras 5-0, etc., we had Des Buckingham in as their manager, and he was played a real attacking football, and it was really nice to watch, and everyone was excited. And then for some reason, they picked Danny Hay for the Olympics. And so instead of going toe-to-toe with Korea, they played the defensive game, and it worked for this one, and we got through. But then the next two games, well, we can talk about them, I guess. Like, did you hear the results of the next two games?
Yes, mate. Well, yeah, so, I mean, you've ended up having to hold off Romania to squeak through in second place, basically, haven't you? So I guess you won up Australia, who also won unexpectedly in their first group stage game against Argentina, but then, have just been knocked out last night at the hands of Egypt. At least you've made it through, despite a 3-2 defeat to Honduras, and then, a backs to the wall, 0-0 draw. Would that be the best way to describe it in the third group stage game against Romania?
Yeah, I think they started off pretty much hesitantly, just played it at the back, kept position. I think the game ended up, they had 60% position or something, and that's also rare for New Zealand teams. So they just starved them off the ball mostly and chances. And then when it got to half time, I think they saw that Honduras were losing 3-0 to Korea, and then it was like, oh, all we need is a nil or draw to get through. So they parked the bus and again did the job. So, yeah, we're all very happy that they did the job. But the minute they did it, I think a lot of us are like, we wouldn't mind seeing them put the foot on the pedal and actually go for it a bit more. But we'll take it for now.
Is there any sort of pressure on them to go and be a bit more expressive in the way that they have been? Or is just the feeling, we've got through, we've done what we came to do, and we're quite happy with that, and we'll continue to do that going on into the tournament?
I think for the general public, just getting through in the tournament is a big thing. No one's really cares about how they do it. But for the supporters that have been watching them, definitely they want... There's been a lot of disappointment, I think, even though they've gone through. But on the players themselves, I think their aim was just to get through. And they'll be reasonably happy just at the moment with that. There's also the fact that we had three... Of course, three overage players, but if one of our players, Michael Boxall, was injured and didn't even make it to Tokyo, and then Winston Reid, he was injured after 6 minutes in the Honduras game. So when you think of it that way, and he's probably out for the tournament now, if you think of it that way, it's pretty good that we did get through, because Winston Reid at the back against Korea he pretty much kept them away, and... he was huge at the back, and with him and Chris Wood, we've got a pretty decent team at this level, but without him, we'll go into it in a minute, but I think Japan will exploit that area quite a bit.
All right, then. Well, so we'll talk about the upcoming quarterfinal in a sec. I guess we'd better chat about the men from Japan. Sam, they've swept France aside 4-0 on Wednesday night to seal top spot in Group A, and then this clash against New Zealand in the quarterfinals. I guess it's fair to say, Sam, that Japan have had a completely opposite-looking group stage to New Zealand. And New Zealand obviously played their toughest game in the first group stage game and won it. Japan played what we thought was their easiest on paper, and they just scraped past South Africa. But then in what we thought would be the hardest two games, Mexico certainly did prove to be very difficult in the second game. But then us perhaps... questioning the mettle of the Japanese players heading into the France game, they put any doubts to bed early on in the second half, and as I say, swept to a thoroughly deserved 4-0 win.
Yeah, I thought they were very good. I mean, France weren't up to a lot really. I mean, they were pretty poor. They did, but there was Gignac was pretty much starved of any service. I thought Tomiyasu, who came back in, was very good. Marshalling him with Yoshida, and the two changes otherwise, Hatate coming in at the left hand side and Ueda going on up front. I thought both played really well. Ueda was kind of involved with the first two goals. It was him just getting his shot away, like. For so often, a Japanese striker, you're often guilty of maybe going for a one pass too many, or just not really being like forward, single-minded enough just to go for the goal. And Ueda did that every time he got the ball and, set up those two goals. That way, Hatate linked really well from that left wing position back, kind of, I think, which is his natural position. You kind of forget with Hatate because he plays everywhere. But, Japan just absolutely controlled that game and kept their heads as well, because in the second half, France resorted to just booting them up in the air. That one tackle for the red card was disgusting. And, yeah, but Japan, yeah, very good, very solid, and, yeah, grown into this tournament. The only worry I would have is that I think the New Zealand game might be more similar to the South Africa game than it is for either of the Mexico or the France ones.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And so, Richie, you will have seen Japan sweep France aside 4-0 last night, already knowing that New Zealand were through as second place, the second place team in Group B by that point of time. So, yeah, you were watching, obviously, knowing that you would be facing Japan. I guess it's a dream scenario, right? I mean, the country you're born in, playing the country that you're now residing in. You know, you've got a foot in both camps. I'm sure you'll be supporting New Zealand in the game. But, how do you think, I guess there's so many different ways we can approach this. But firstly, I guess from the New Zealand perspective, watching what Japan did to France last night, but knowing how effective New Zealand have been in, as you say, parking the bus for most of the group stage games. Do you see any difference in the approach, and how effective do you think it will be against a Japan team that seemingly have their tails about as high as they can be?
It's going to be tough. I think I had my hands over my eyes half the time watching the Japan game last night. They looked special, didn't they? And if they play like that again, I don't think that New Zealand will have much of a chance. I think they'll probably go in and try and park the bus, as I said, for as long as they can. But I think you've got to think about the heat too, and Japan is a lot more used to the heat. I think some of the New Zealand players are tiring out a bit, and their squad's probably not as deep as Japan. So I don't think they can survive parking the bus even for the full 90. I don't think it would go beyond that. But I think that's probably the tactic they will use. And I think then if they happen to go a goal down or so, then they're going to have to come out of their shells and try something. But I'm thinking Japan's just looking pretty good. And I think they'll exploit a young back line now that Winston Reid's out especially. And it's going to be tough. New Zealand was good at keeping possession against Romania, but Romania didn't have the class that Japan had at the front. Either. So I it's going to be tough. I could see New Zealand maybe, they could eke out a 1-0 win kind of on the counter, score a one on the counter, but then they could lose 3-0 or something. I think if Japan score more than one goal, then I think they're safe. One goal, you still never know what's going to happen. But if they score maybe two goals, I think that'll be too much for New Zealand. And I think New Zealand would just be trying to hold on for the time being, I think, for the start. How do you guys think about it all?
Yeah, I think it'd be quite a difficult game. I'd be fairly confident in saying it'd probably be 0-0 at half time, that New Zealand will hold them off for a while. But I think the lack of Winston Reid must be a huge blow for New Zealand. I think eventually the quality of Kubo and Doan will eventually tire them out, and they'll get a. There'll be a slip in concentration, they'll get in behind, and I think eventually Japan will break them down. As you say, if Japan do score early and then New Zealand have to come out, I mean, Kubo and Doan on the counter-attack in the games against Mexico and France have just torn those teams apart. So, yeah, New Zealand have to keep it as tight as they can for as long as they can, but I do think eventually the quality will tell for Japan. What about you, Ben?
Well, at this stage of things, that's how I would be thinking about things as well, Sam. But I mean, yes, it's tournament football. It's now knockout football, and it doesn't take much to swing the pendulum of a game. So yeah, if it's tight early, if it's 0-0 at halftime, New Zealand will obviously, while they might be tiring physically, they'll still be gaining. Mental strength in the fact that it only takes one slip from Japan, it only takes one moment of magic from them to perhaps cause a surprise. So, Richie, then let's say Japan do score the first goal and New Zealand are forced to come out a little bit, for casual watchers of the New Zealand national team. They will know the name Chris Wood, who is a terrific striker, as you said earlier, for Burnley in the Premier League. Not only good with his head, but also at holding up the ball and terrific on the floor as well. So apart from him, what are the other avenues to goal that New Zealand might be able to get some joy with if they're a goal down and needing to chase the game, or if it's 0-0 with 20 minutes to go and they want to go and win it, what are their best avenues to do that, do you think?
I think they're reasonably strong on the left side and with Liberato Kakeche. He scored their wonder goal against Honduras, cracking goal. He's been linking up pretty well. So down the left, I think they're strong with him. They've got Joey Chapness, who plays for Brisbane Roar. He looked pretty good last week. The last game. And I think down the left, they've got a bit, and then there's a young Eli Just on the right side, who plays for FC Helsingør in the Danish First Division. He's looked pretty good as well. I think down the left, they look good. The right, with Just as right, but as I say, in behind the right, that's where I think the problem is for New Zealand. I think the left side, even the defence is strong too, but just, again, for Japan, I think if they attack on, which will be their left side, I think they might create some damage down that side. We haven't looked that strong there. And I think pretty much it will go down to balls out in the flank. For New Zealand, balls out in the flank, trying to hit them in. And Chris Wood, you know how he is with the ball. If he gets good service, he can finish anything. So I think that's pretty much the key. As long as he's on there, there's still a chance of something happening, right? But I think pretty much down the flanks, I think Japan will have them covered in the middle of the field. Just too strong, I think, defensively. I think something probably like that.
All right. Well, if they are to have joy down their left, they will do that most likely, Sam, against Daiki Hashioka, as of course Hiroki Sakai, who scored Japan's second goal against France, was later booked for the second time in the group stage and is now suspended for the quarterfinal. So Hashioka replaced him in the second half and then promptly sent in a superb cross that Reo Hatate somehow headed wide from dead centre. But any slippage here for Japan for you, do you think, with Hashioka replacing Sakai, or will he just be slotting straight into what looks like a pretty well-oiled machine, even though, as you say, there was a further change at centre-back with Tomiyasu replacing Koe Takura for the France game?
Well, I think no disrespect to Hashioka, but I think Sakai is a top right back. I mean, he has been for Japan for a long time, and his energy going forward and then in recovery is kind of pretty crucial to the way that Japan play, both for the senior team and for this Olympic team, especially when you're trying to break down a tight defence. You could do with that energy on the overlap to give an option for Kubo, and then even a bit more space for Kubo to cut inside, or Doan or whoever might be on that right side. And yeah, he's probably got a little bit more of the energy in terms of getting back and making those recovery blocks. But Hashioka is a good footballer in his own right. He's started to break through in Belgium, and I think I think it is a slight downgrade, obviously, from Sakai, but he looked very good when he came on, and it's good that he managed to get those minutes in. I think that was clever management from Moriyasu to allow him to kind of ease his way into the tournament before being thrown in at the deep end in a quarterfinal. So I don't have too many worries about Hashioka's ability going forward or defensively, but yeah, I think most people would say that they'd rather have Hiroki Sakai starting for Japan.
Yeah, fair enough. So, Richie, we've spoken from a New Zealand perspective, of course, but what about with the shoe on your other foot? And, as a resident of Japan, I'm sure you will have been pleased with the way Japan have progressed through the group stage, although it does now look pretty ominous for New Zealand. But, I mean, the way they dealt with Mexico, obviously making such a fast start, and then, just playing France off the park, and, France resorting to, as Sam said, just trying to kick them up in the air for most of the second half. It was, I think that 4-0, I'm I don't mind the odd hyperbolic statement here, but that's one of the best international results that Japan have ever had, I think, at any sort of age group level. You know, even for a senior men's team, they haven't had too many better results than that. And to do it in the third group stage game where you pretty much had one foot in the knockout stage, but you still had to finish your opponent off, and to do it 4-0 and in such an excellent style was, I thought was very, very impressive.
Ah, I completely agree. I think a lot of this is where the all those pre-Olympic games, pre-Olympic friendlies, pre-Olympic. How many did they play? Four? Was it four before the Olympics started? I think it was three or four.
Yeah, in the last few months they have, definitely. Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's where this will help them again against New Zealand. Like, New Zealand had two training games against Australia. That's all they had, really. And Japan had those games, and you can really see the team. You know, I think the first game, there's always a bit of nerves, isn't there? It's your first game, you're at home, you're in the Olympics. They got the job done, but you just see them connecting, and then when it came to their France game, they were supreme, and I completely agree. That game was, one of the best games I've seen them play. Well, the Japan team in any level. It was beautiful to watch, and, just watching France resort to those tactics, as you say. Yeah, it was very nice. I agree, but as I say, very scary for me watching from this side.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that Kolo Muani fella, he's got some cheek. It's trotting on the back of Koji Miyoshi's calf, and then having the gall to look surprised when he actually got sent off after that VAR review. That was... That was Oscar-worthy performance there from that young fella. But all right, so Sam, looking at the what's going to happen here for the knockout stage for Japan. Now, Moriyasu isn't going to want to be looking past New Zealand at all, but I would argue that he's played the group stage about as perfectly as he could. He obviously had fitness doubts over one of his first choice centre back, so he's been able to hold him back until the third group stage game. He's tried three different options on the left hand side of the front three, with the Koji Miyoshi playing against South Africa, Yuki Soma against Mexico, which was tactical, as you mentioned on the last episode, and then Reo Hatate against France. So a couple of questions. Does Tomiyasu keep his spot, do you think, now that he's back to full fitness? Who plays on the left of the front three? And the wild card here, especially in that position, is that the player who some would argue is his best player in his entire squad plays in the same position, and he's only played 10 minutes through the group stage and is hopefully now cherry ripe for an assault on not only New Zealand, but if Japan can get past them, and again, he won't want to look past them, but the rest of the knockout stage.
Yeah, I don't want to worry Richie too much, but he mentioned the defensive issues at right back, and Japan have a very fresh air. Karo Mitoma, who they could just slot in there, and I wouldn't be surprised if this was the game to unleash him. I think, if it sounds like he'd get a lot of joy there, and he's a terrific player, so I'm sure he'd play very well in that position if given the game. There are so many options for Japan, which is really nice to see, and no one who's playing on that left side has let Japan down, so, I mean, you could slot in whoever you like there, but for me, it has to be Mitoma for this one, and Tomiyasu just came through that game against France. He didn't look like he'd missed a beat, so I'm just keeping that partnership going, and I think the rest of the team pretty much selects itself. I think Nakayama has done very well slotting in at left back. That was kind of the one concern position we had prior to the tournament, but he's looked very good there. I mean, I can't praise Endo and Tanaka any more than I usually do in midfield, and Kubo and Doan, and I think I'd go Ueda up front as well. I thought he was really impressive against France. So, that would be my team. Just Mitoma in for Hatate, but that's nothing against what Hatate did. And obviously Hashioka at right back.
All right, terrific stuff then. So, it promises to be a fascinating game. That's one of my favourite adjectives, as a regular listeners know. A Saturday night at Kashima Soccer Stadium, Japan versus New Zealand in the Olympic quarterfinals. Richie, we wish the New Zealand team all the best. We hope it's a good game, and that they're able to express themselves maybe a little bit more as you would have liked them to in the group stage. We just hope it's a good game, and may the best team game win. Whoever does win will then play either Spain or the Ivory Coast in the semi-finals. But yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So for now, mate, it's been great to catch up with you and yeah, find out a little bit more about the New Zealand team. And once again, we wish them all the best for the big game on Saturday night.
Yeah, thank you. Let's just hope for, as you say, just hope for a good game between two teams. As I say, I think Japan has got a lot more pace and a lot more to them. I think they should get through, but hopefully New Zealand, you know, give them some opposition, give them some to think about, give them some to work on. We'll see what happens, but let's just enjoy knockout football.
Indeed. Well said, Richie. All right. So, yeah, thanks again to Richie Palmer. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will have a quick look back at how Nadeshiko Japan made it through to their quarterfinal. Welcome back. And, yeah, great to hear from Richie again. And great to see Sam and Nadeshiko Japan make it through to the quarterfinals after their final group stage game against Chile. They did huff and puff for large stages of it. They weren't particularly impressive for most of the game, it must be said. But ultimately, a Mina Tanaka goal with 13 minutes to go settled Japanese nerves and ensured that Japan would make it through to the last eight.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest ever performance. It was a lot better, I thought, than the previous games against GB and against Canada. They were actually going forward and creating chances. The finishing from the majority of the game was pretty poor, but they kept going and eventually they got the breakthrough and got a victory. And hopefully this just is a bit of a morale boost for them, a bit of confidence going into the quarterfinal. It was great to see a few fans in the stadium, and just over 1,000, which is... Yeah, I was hoping more when China versus Zambia got 2,000, but at least 1,300 or so people got to see Japan score and celebrate a victory.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so what did the manager, Asako Takakura, do in the third group stage game, Sam? She shuffled her pack a little bit to a mixed effect, I think it would be fair to say. She reinstated her most experienced striker, Yuika Sugasawa, for this one. But much like in the group stage opener against Canada, it looked like Sugasawa had her boots on the wrong feet, as just nothing was working for her at all. And as in the opener against Canada, she was replaced at halftime by Tanaka. So whether she's going to park, Takakura's going to park that idea for the knockout stages, we'll wait and see. But elsewhere, yeah, what other tweaks did she make, and what worked for Japan that didn't, especially in the previous two games?
Well, generally speaking, the formation and the system and how they've set up has been very similar. That 4-4-2 brought Iwabuchi back, which is obviously the quality that they need up front. But generally speaking, yeah, the team was pretty much the same. Ikeda came back into goal after Yamashita, her poor error, I think, against GB. But yeah, they were a little bit more dynamic and going forward. There was a bit more urgency. They were always looking to go through the lines a bit quicker. There were a lot of things that I still a little bit off, I thought, but just the kind of mindset was a lot better than it was in the previous games, and it kind of had to be, because if Japan had gone through with a 0-0 draw and just scraped into the quarterfinals, then really you've got no hope when you get there. But at least this was a bit more positive. I thought in midfield, Sugita, who's come in the last couple of games, I thought she was good, and they were just... But, yeah, I'm trying to think of anyone else that really stood out to me. And I am struggling, to be honest, because it was a slightly better performance. But, yeah, I still think there is not really, besides Iwabuchi, there's not really anyone that has really grabbed me as someone who's just starting to watch this Japan's team. No one's really stood out to me and grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. So, yeah, it's still work to do to kind of win me round. What about you? Were there seeds of... hope in this performance?
Well, it was obviously great to see Iwabuchi back in, and having more of an influence, I think, on this game than she had in the Canada game, even though she scored that terrific goal late on. I mean, she was kind of starved of opportunities for the most part in that game, wasn't she? And obviously she was held back until the very latter stages of the second game against Great Britain. But yeah, for me, a bright spark came on with about 25 minutes to go, and it was somebody who we'd asked Alex Bishop about on the Olympic preview episode, and that was 18-year-old Momoka Kinoshita, She replaced Yui Hasegawa on the right side of midfield. And, for me, she... Yeah, not everything she tried came off, don't get me wrong. But, yes, yeah, she tried to take people on. She tried to run at people. She was, always presenting herself and, looked to link up with the forward. So, for me, she came into the 18 for the first time in the group stage. And I think she's done enough in her 25-minute cameo to hopefully keep her place in the matchday squad and be a potential wild card for what shapes as a tremendously difficult game against Sweden on Friday, doesn't it, Sam? I mean, Sweden have been in ominous form throughout the group stage, and it could hardly have been a more difficult draw for Nadeshko Japan.
No, I think it is the worst team that they could have come up against. Sweden have been absolutely immense in their three games. Obviously, the headline game, the 3-0 defeat of the United States, just absolutely tore them apart for a lot of that game. A United States side that were coming into it with their media suggesting that the Olympics was too easy for them. So it was nice to see them get a little bit of kick in the teeth from Sweden in that first game. Australia, in the second one, it was a little bit back and forth first half, but second half, Sweden's quality really showed, and they kind of breezed through that second half to get a 4-2 win, and then pretty comfortably saw off New Zealand in the final group game. So yeah, really tough for Japan. I think they're going up against the favourites at the moment, and the way that Japan have been playing, I don't hold out too much hope, but hopefully they can take something from that Chile game, really build on that. And you never know with Japan. If Japan play to the maximum, the way that they can play, then you never know. They have got a chance against Sweden with home advantage, but yeah, it's a really tough fixture for them.
Yeah, it's almost shaping as if Japan are playing the role of New Zealand in the men's quarterfinal that we've just spoken to Richie about, right? I mean, Japan have kind of eked their way through after one victory in the group stage, and New Zealand obviously got theirs in the New Zealand men rather got theirs in their first group stage game. The Japanese women got theirs in the last, but they're coming up against an opponent. In the case of New Zealand, it's the Japanese men. In the case of the Japanese women, it's the Swedish ladies, who are sweeping all before them and gaining a lot of momentum seemingly as the tournament progresses. So for the Japanese men, it's going to be hard to keep a lid on expectations. And I don't know much about how the Swedish media are approaching things these days, but I imagine they'll be in a similar boat with their women's team, because as you say, it's basically as tough as it could get for Japan. If they do manage to make it through Nadeshko Japan, this game at Saitama Stadium on Friday night, they would then play the winner of Great Britain versus Australia in the semi-final. So, Sam, that's you versus me. So that's that promises to be a tasty affair. I'm pretty sure that Australia will be well and truly up for it, and I'm sure Team GB will be as well. Hopefully, the commentators will remember to call them by their correct names on this occasion.
No, there's no need for that. I watched the commentary of the GB game just gone, and they still had Phil Neville as their manager, so I don't think research is forte of the commentary teams at this tournament. But yeah, it should be a very interesting game. Britain versus Australia in any format, in any sport, is always a great game, and let's hope we just don't come to blows when we record next week.
Yes. I think at the end of the game, we should burn one of the sets of goalposts and whack them in an urn and start a new. I don't know. We should call it the Ashes or something like that. I think that might might catch on.
It's got a ring to it. Make a really small trophy, really minute. That's the ones you have to fight for.
Yeah. For no apparent reason, make it the smallest trophy known to mankind. Yeah. Yes, indeed. All right. Okay. So, it's all to play for then. The Japanese women, Nadeshko Japan, will play Sweden on Friday night at Saitama Stadium with the spot in the semifinals on the line. And then on the Saturday night, the Japanese men will face off against the Ollie Whites. That's what Richie referred to them as. wasn't it, Sam? Yeah, Team New Zealand, India, the men's quarterfinal at Kashima. And, yep, should be two cracking games. And we're looking forward to, running the rule over them in our next episode. We'll also be talking more about Gunma Osaka in our next episode, Sam. But while we're here, we might as well talk about their huge win on Tuesday night at home against Oita. It looked like they were headed for yet another home defeat until some late heroics saw them overturn a 1-0 deficit and emerge 2-1 victors.
Yeah, it was a crucial result for them because, a 1-0 defeat at home to Oita, I mean, that would have taken Oita, I think, above them in the table, and it would have really crushed any sort of morale at Gamba, but they kept going. They had a lot of chances in this game and really did deserve to win it in the end, and I'm quite happy that Takashi Usami has finally got a goal because he has been trying his hardest in the last few games and coming very close on a number of occasions with kind of late volleys or whatever that have just gone wide, so he finally got his goal and Gamba got a vital 3 points. They've taken them out of the relegation zone, which is very good psychologically, and now they can hope to build on that with three more games before the rest of the league starts up again. I think Sapporo is the first game on Friday, and that should always be an exciting game whenever Sapporo play, and then Sendai on Tuesday, and then Yokohama following that. So, there are three games that hopefully Gamba will look at and crawl their way a bit further from up the table and into safety because, lose that game against Oita, and then they're really up against it, and they could have found themselves still in the relegation places by the time the game's kicked off. So, really important for them.
Yes, most definitely. So the Oita defender, Henrique Trevisan, gave visiting Oita Trinita a 60th-minute lead. But then, the late heroics, Leandro Pereira, netting with 6 minutes to go. And then, as you say, Sam, in the fourth minute of stoppage time, Takashi Usami got the winner. And, a huge goal for him personally, but, more importantly, for Gamba, as you say, Sam, to get them out of the drop zone with three games in hand on the teams immediately above them. Yes, so by the time the league resumes as a whole on Monday the 9th of August, Gamba will be hoping to be well and truly away from the drop zone. Okay, we'll leave it there. That was the only J1 game that we had to chat about in the interim. So, two episodes in a week for your listeners. We hope you appreciate that. We hope you appreciate having heard from Richie Palmer tonight, the great man, the great Kiwi, and he loves his New Zealand sports, and he'll be absolutely buzzing to see New Zealand through to the quarters. But Sam, we fear for New Zealand in the form that Japan are in. But as we say, in knockout tournament football, literally anything can happen. So we're not looking past New Zealand at all, are we?
No, not at all. We saw how much Japan struggled against South Africa, who just sat in, and I'm sure New Zealand will take hope from that and the way that they beat South Korea. So, it's going to be a difficult game for Japan, but I do expect them to progress, but I have more fears for the women against Sweden. I think that's they're in for a very difficult evening.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, we'll leave it there. That is it for the second episode of the week of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Richie Palmer very much for his time on this episode. We'd like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And, of course, listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next time to review the Olympic quarterfinals and look ahead, hopefully, to some semi-finals for the Japan national teams. Speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.